Lieutenant Commander David Ashton was dimly aware of the beauty of the bright spring day as he leisurely strolled toward the White House gate along Pennsylvania Avenue. He arrived a couple hours earlier and spent his time in solitude wandering aimlessly, blissfully unaware of the bystanders and tourists alike who stopped and stared, gawking at his tall, slim, handsome appearance in the immaculate dress blue uniform of the Space Command. Half of his mind was mentally alert, keeping himself on track, ever watching for something out of place. But the other half was miles away. He thrived on excitement, and this was definitely different and could well be a new adventure. His life was far from normal, always in the midst of dramatic adventure, even on what he now considered a routine voyage in space. But that was the reason he joined Space Command several years earlier. He hadn't had a decent night's sleep thinking about those unusual orders since his arrival back on Earth. As he and his family stepped off the shuttlecraft taking him from his ship, the Centaur II, which was now in orbit, to his home port at Norfolk Naval Air Station, he had been handed a sealed envelope by a military courier. The young ensign checked his identification and got his signature on the transferal receipt and left. Inside, he found brief orders. Lieutenant Commander David S. Ashton, report to the White House at 0930 hours, May 7th, 2572. Speak to no one concerning these orders. Present sealed envelope to guard at the gate. Signed, President Hugh Gardner. David was the youngest executive officer in Space Command, rising rapidly to serve as third in command aboard the Centaur II on a mission to Mars supporting geologists in search of uranium and other rare minerals. 5 years earlier, he met his wife Marie, an astronaut trainee while aboard another vehicle traveling through and mapping remote planets within the solar system, working with NASA, preparing astronauts for the rigors of space travel. After 3 years of marriage, their daughter Laura was born while in orbit over Mars. He couldn't discuss this morning's adventure with Marie, nor tell her where he would be today. Fortunately, Marie was on duty shuttling to and from orbit, delivering their precious cargo of uranium, and would remain on duty until the mission was complete. After the cargo was delivered, she would be off with him, expecting extended shore leave. She understood and supported him when he often worked on confidential matters involving other crew members, and the tables were turned when he was needed to support her with her duties aboard the shuttle. She wanted some time off with her family, but David wasn't certain that that was in the cards, considering his new orders. At precisely 0930 hours, he handed the envelope to the guard and presented his identification. The guard broke the seal, read the instructions, and motioned David through the security scanners before he was guided toward the Oval Office. He had never been inside the presidential mansion before and couldn't help gawking at the historic memorabilia and artwork hung on the walls, nestled in and around nooks and crannies along the corridors as he was escorted toward a small conference room where he found an old friend. Admiral Thomas White was a large man who was military all the way, but made an exception in David's case. Before David could offer a salute, the admiral stretched out his arms and hugged him. "David, it's been a long time. It's good to see you. How's it been going?" Admiral White had been David's first commander, and they had lots of fond memories to share. "I'm enjoying every minute, especially since I met my wife. At the moment, I'm speechless. Hardly know what to say. It's good to see you, sir. What's up?" "Hold on. Have a little patience." He laughed heartedly. "I'm really not at liberty to say. The president will be with us shortly and explain everything." He changed the subject abruptly. "Heard you and your wife had a baby girl. A real doll. She's almost two and has us wrapped around her little finger. And how's Gladys? As I recall, she was the most beautiful red-headed gal I ever saw."